The 2024 general election is high stakes and will be highly scrutinized. So what do you need to know to prepare? We'll discuss voting and election administration on this edition of Iowa Press.
Funding for Iowa Press was provided by Friends, the Iowa PBS Foundation, the Associated General Contractors of Iowa, the public's partner in building Iowa's highway, bridge, and municipal utility infrastructure.
Elite Casino Resorts is rooted in Iowa. Elite's 1,600 employees are our company's greatest asset. A family-run business, Elite supports volunteerism, encourages promotions from within, and shares profits with our employees.
Across Iowa, hundreds of neighborhood banks strive to serve their communities, provide jobs, and help local businesses. Iowa banks are proud to back the life you build. Learn more at iowabankers.com.
For decades, Iowa Press has brought you political leaders and newsmakers from across Iowa and beyond, celebrating more than 50 years on statewide Iowa PBS. This is the Friday, September 20th edition of Iowa Press. Here is Kay Henderson.
The 2024 general election is on November 5th. If you're looking at your calendar, next Tuesday marks 6 weeks until it's happening. Is that correct? Our guests today are individuals who administer elections in Iowa at the state and local level. Iowans currently are able to ask for an absentee ballot, fill out a form, and do that with their local county auditor. Early voting in Iowa does not start until October 16th. We'll discuss all the deadlines and some of the issues surrounding election 2024 with our guest, Paul Pate, who's been at this desk before. He is Iowa's Secretary of State, currently in his fourth term as Secretary of State. Welcome back.
Thank you.
And our other guest is Becky Bissell. She is the Adams County Auditor, and she's also the current president of the Iowa State Association of County Auditors. Welcome to both of you.
Thank you.
Joining our conversation is Katarina Sestarik of Iowa Public Radio and Aaron Murphy of the Gazette in Cedar Rapids.
So we have so many of these election procedure topics we want to get into. But first, real quick, Secretary Pate, wanted to ask you about something that happened this week. Iowa was among a number of states that received what's being described as suspicious packages delivered to elections offices. What can you tell us about what arrived in at your office? You closed down the office out of security reasons that day. And do you have any sense of why Iowa among all these states?
Well, it was very disappointing that someone's acting out like this and trying to disrupt our elections process. We have procedures in place. So when this happened, we were prepared for it. We quickly reached out to the public safety folks, the Highway Patrol in our case, and brought in the hazmat teams to deal with the mailing that was sent in. The sad part is it sends a message sometimes, an unfortunate one, to our own employees, the people who run the elections, that they have to, in addition to doing their professional job, they have to do these safety measures. So, but we're stepping into it. I think it was someone trying to get attention. Quite frankly, when you start doing the 17, 18 states or whatever the number's gotten to now, they want some attention, and I'm not going to give it to them. We're going to keep business as usual and keep the elections on track.
You took those preemptive security measures. Was there ever a concern about anyone's safety at any point?
No. Thank goodness. But, you know, it's a very unfortunate situation, and we're not going to tolerate it. We're going to keep moving forward.
Paul Pate, there have been some concerns raised at the national level about non-citizens voting in U.S. elections. How do you assure Iowans that, you know, non-citizens aren't voting in our elections in large numbers?
Right. Well, the law says very clearly you have to be a U.S. citizen to vote. Let's start with that. We have voter ID. So we are establishing a baseline of you have to prove who you are. We also are working with our partners. We work with the court system. There's various partners who will help us identify those folks who are here legally but not U.S. citizens. And I don't want to say that there isn't someone doing this, because our role is to make sure only eligible voters vote. Even 1, 2, 5, 100, whatever the number might be, is not acceptable. So we'll keep trying to make sure we're protecting and keeping that away. I don't believe in Iowa we have any of those types of massive voter fraud. I think the bad boys and girls, those really serious illegals, are not looking to be recognized for anything. They're here just kind of stay under the radar. So I don't think we'll see a lot of it at this time in Iowa.
And Becky Bissell, in your county, have you ever had any issues with non-citizens trying to register to vote?
No, we have all the same procedures in place that Secretary Pate was talking about, and we cross-check with the DOT and other state agencies to make sure that all the voters that are registered are able and eligible voters.
Becky Bissell, there was a delay in printing ballots this year because of a legal challenge. Have you or any of your county auditor colleagues expressed concerns or had any problems with that delay?
Anytime that we have a shortened time window of getting our ballots to us and in our hand is always a concern. The biggest concern that I had was making sure that all the county auditors and their staff proofread the ballots to make sure that all the races were going to be on there and, you know, they're in the right order. Everything is laid out in the code of Iowa, how we have to do it. And so it's just making sure that you're taking that time and not rushing that process. But I know that all of my counterparts are doing the best that they can. And we're still waiting for our ballots to be printed. And I know that a lot of the counties are as well. Uokava votes have to, or ballots have to go out today.
And so, those are ballots to?
To overseas and military voters. Yep, sorry.
It's okay.
And so those have to go out today. So a lot of the auditors and their staff are having to use the proofs. And once they've approved those, then we cut off the markers on the side. And then we get those sent out. So then when they come back, we have the bipartisan absentee board fill out an actual ballot. And then that's the one that will be counted. So they make sure that they fill out that ballot exactly how that voter had indicated on the proofed ballot that was sent to them. So
common practice, Paul Pate, to do that kind of?
Yes, most certainly. And we agree that it's not the ideal way to be putting this under the clock like that. We'll probably be looking at some of these dates for next cycle because we need to give the auditors as much of a window as possible to get the ballots prepared, because that's a mistake that's pretty hard to fix later.
And you're talking about the date for certifying the
yes,
ballot,
correct.
Which in this instance was in late August.
Yes.
You'd like it to be earlier?
Well, we're going to explore those options just okay. because, again, if we're going to be going into court on matters, we need to allow the courts time to act on it and give our auditors time.
Paul Pate, let's briefly talk about why you were in court. There were three libertarians mm-hmm. who were nominated to be on the ballot, and you as a member of the state objection panel voted to not allow them to be right. on the ballot. Libertarians say they're not being treated fairly. Mm-hmm. What's your response?
Well, they're now recognized as a major party. They truly are. They're not a third party. They are a major party. And Republican, Democrat, and Libertarians have a set of rules the state of Iowa puts out there for them to operate under. I'm a referee. Becky's a referee. We don't get to make the rules up. We just enforce them and call them as they are. And in this particular case, they didn't take the time to know the rules. If you're going to run for Congress, a very significant federal office, you should know the rules. And unfortunately, they didn't. I feel it because there's a lot of passion going in when you want to run for office. But it's a serious office, and you really need to do the right procedures to make sure you're successful. And they didn't in this case. And the district court and the Iowa Supreme Court agreed.
Paul Pate, looking ahead to the election, Iowa, unlike a lot of other states, has not faced some of the heightened scrutiny over its election results in recent presidential mm-hmm. elections, in part because former President Trump has won comfortably here and hasn't felt the need to call into question. We got a new poll this week in Iowa that suggested that, at this point anyways, the campaign between Donald Trump and Kamala Harris is very close. If that comes to be on November 5th, or if Kamala Harris pulls off an upset here and wins Iowa, are you confident that all Iowans will trust in Iowa's election results?
Well, we do our best to give them that assurance. Again, as I said, I have to recognize a passion. It's like a sports team. You root for your team. You know, you believe they're the best when they go out on the field to compete. And should they not win, you might be disappointed. but you have to get over it because there's another game later. But there are those who are going to go, no, I'm going to call the officiating. I'm going to claim something else might have happened. But we're spending a lot of time right now just educating the public as to what we do in Iowa so we have that transparency so they know. You know, we got the voter ID, we have post-election audits, we have paper ballots, we have poll workers who are your friends and neighbors. That's a pretty serious arsenal to give you the kind of voter integrity so that you should know the results on the procedure side is on the up and up.
And Becky, from the folks that you work with and in your county, I know this kind of pressure on elections processes and the election day workers is part of one of many reasons that, from what I've been told, is hard to find those kinds of people. How is that going, and how much of a challenge is it to find people to work on election day, irregardless, but in our current political climate?
I mean, I can't blame them for not wanting to step up and into the spotlight like they have been thrusted into here recently. But luckily, in my area, we have really good citizens that believe in the process. They believe in what they're doing. They've been doing it for me for, I've been in office for 12 years, but they've been with the county for 20 years or 30 years, you know, being poll workers. So they take great pride in what they're doing, and that goes for every poll worker in the state of Iowa. And we're trying to give them a little bit more confidence. We're trying to give them more training, you know, de-escalation training, things like that, that we feel will help them. But in the end, they want to do a good job, and they want to do it for the right reasons.
Paul Pate, last year you pulled Iowa out of ERIC, which is a multi-state partnership where for information sharing to help keep the voter rolls clean. Do you have a replacement in place for that system?
We have put together some partnerships and trying to pull the information together. And again, the reason we withdrew from that organization, it was we were not getting the cooperation from the states we needed the data from. We weren't getting Illinois, we weren't getting Texas and Florida's. So we were paying for something that wasn't giving us the information. We have snowbirds. If they're going to go to Florida and Texas, I need to know about them. And so we decided we were better off if we worked with the DOT. And the DOT has all 50 states. So that's our future. That's the approach we're taking now. We're going to be partnering more with them to be able to bring that information into us. ERIC was a great thing in the beginning. It allowed us and encouraged other states to clean their list up. And we did a good job of that. Our list is very clean here in Iowa, and we just got to keep it that way.
And just to be clear, is the new strategy that you're talking about, is that in place already for the 2024 election?
Parts of it are. It's not completed yet. It's something in the works.
And Becky Bissell, how has that affected your ability to keep the voter rolls clean, if at all, the lack of ERIC?
We just follow the procedures that are already in place. And so we have national change of address, postcards that go out each year and maybe twice a year. So yeah, when they move within the state, we can catch those as well. But we just have to go by the code of Iowa, and that allows us to cancel a voter, to make them inactive. And so,
all right. Yeah. Becky Bissell, there are a number of county election officials, county auditors, who are new this year, and maybe this may be their first presidential election. How are you bringing them up to speed with all of the things that you've already talked about on this program and some of the other things that they have to deal with on election day?
So we have had three conferences this year already, and we partnered with Secretary Pate and his office, where they gave 4+ hours of training to the auditors and our staff at each one of those conferences. And they've brought de-escalation, they've brought you know, how to safely open up mail. Wide variety of trainings is what they have brought to us. So we are so fortunate that they have been partnering with us on that side of things. We've also done tabletop exercises with the Secretary of State. They've brought in other sources like CISA or federal sources, resources that can come in and help us just make sure that we have all of our policies and procedures in place. And then the major thing that we rely on is each other. We've got great communications amongst the auditors and all of our staff, and we really bounce ideas off of each other. And then in the end, you know, go back to the Secretary of State and say, hey, does this work? And hopefully we get confirmation that is right. And then we go on from there. But we do also have a training program that's called SEAT. It stands for State Election Administrative Training. And so the majority of the auditors and their staffs are certified in that. There's three different levels to that. And so we take great pride in that program and actually won a Cleary Award with the EAC this last year for that program.
What's the EAC?
The Election Administration Commission.
Okay.
It's a federal commission that brings election officials from all over the country together and, again, brainstorm ideas. And so we are very fortunate for the certification process that we have in the state of Iowa with us, with our auditing affiliate.
Paul, in the last presidential election, 2020, we had record turnout in Iowa. Part of that was enabled by the pandemic and mm-hmm. kind of relaxing some of the rules regarding voting by mail for folks who didn't want to come out to the polls during the COVID-19 pandemic. Will we ever see those rules are back to normal now? Will we ever see turnout numbers like we saw in 2020?
I'm not sure. What we saw was we were about 75% voter turnout during that period. And then otherwise, it's more like 72%. So we'll watch. But in all fairness, voter turnout is really all about the candidates. We do our job to try to make sure we make sure there are no barriers, that people understand the process and all the other things. But at the end of the day, it's usually the candidates and their message and that kind of is really the turnout factor. And so we have cycles where it's really high. And you can look back and see that. Ronald Reagan's first term, Barack Obama's first term, Donald Trump's first term, all these candidates really brought out a lot of voters. So we'll watch with interest how this one goes.
I hear that all the time from political science folks, too, that it's the candidates that drive turnout numbers. Becky Bissell, what are you kind of bracing for? Or what do you hear from your colleagues? What are you expecting for turnout?
I think we'll see another high election year as well. We are seeing a lot of people questioning the mail process. So I could see our absentee vote by mail be a little bit lower this year, mostly because of the shortened time window to that we can mail out the ballots and then get them back. But also, the mailing service has elongated their days. And so it takes 5 to 7 days in the rural areas in order to get a ballot from when I drop it off to the voter. So
I think Katarina has a question on that exact topic for you.
Well, I was going to say you recently signed on to a letter to the U.S. Postal Service expressing concerns about the mail service. What is it that you think they need to do before the election to ensure people's ballots get there on time?
A lot of training is my biggest concern, and then making sure that they aren't losing the ballots and that they're getting to the voters and then they're getting back. We have a 20-day window from when we can mail out the ballots. 3 of those days, the Postal Service doesn't deliver mail, so we're down to 17 days. If it takes 7 days for the ballot to get to them, then they essentially have 3 days to get that ballot voted in back to us, and that's a pretty small window. So we just are really trying to educate anybody that is wanting their ballot by mail to make sure they get their absentee request form into the auditor's office now, and then we can get that mailed out on October 16th. And then as soon as you get it voted and get it back to us so they can either hand deliver it back to the offices, they can put it into an election drop box if a county has one. In my county, we don't have an election drop box, so if they can't get out of the car, pull into the spot outside of the courthouse, call my office, and we'd be more than happy to come down and get that from the voter.
Paul Pate, let's help voters who may be navigating the election mm-hmm. system for the very first time and people who need a little bit of a refresher. As I mentioned at the onset, you today are able to request an absentee ballot. Right. Go online or do I walk into the county auditor's office?
Well, you have a lot of options. And in fact, I encourage people to have a plan for voting to be successful. Let's start out with voter registration. If you're registered, great, but go online to voterready.iowa.gov. And you look up your name to make sure it's current and accurate. If you haven't, you can register to vote right there. That's the starting point. Now you decide how you want to vote. If you want to vote by mail, as Becky has said, there's some timetables here. You really need to know. So, yes, you can get your request form online, or you can get it from the county auditor and get that into those folks. And do it quickly. The candidates will bless you for that, too, to be very honest. They want you to process as quickly as possible. You also then can start coming in to the courthouses and do your early voting in person after the 16th. So you've got a lot of options on that front. Also, there's a little insurance policy here. You can track your ballot. If you go on to the voterready.iowa.gov site, you can see did the county courthouse get my request for an absentee ballot? It shows you the date. It'll show you the date that the courthouse mailed it out to you. It'll show you the date they received it back. And if any point here you're seeing your ballots not getting there, go to Plan B. And Plan B will be either go down to the courthouse and vote or come on election day to a traditional polling location so you are successful. So you've got some safety measures in there. We want to make sure people avail themselves to it.
Becky Bissell, the last option that people have if they're not registered is to show up at a precinct on election day. What does a person need to bring with them in order to cast a ballot?
Yeah. They need to be able to prove their identity and their residency. There's a great list on the Secretary of State's website and also on many county auditors' websites that gives a list of all of the options that they can provide to suffice that those requirements. But it's really planning ahead. I love the message that Secretary Pate is putting out there to really plan. What we see a lot in our rural county is people don't update their driver's licenses when they move, so they might move across the city, you know, or maybe move up the road to the farmstead. But they think, oh, I'll just renew my ID when the renewal period comes up. So then when they go to vote, then it doesn't match what they're registered as, and it creates just extra steps and extra headaches. So not only register to vote, but also make sure that your ID matches where you are registered to vote. Because it's really not anything malice that they're trying to do. It's just, you know, you don't think about it. So that's what we see a lot of with issues, and that's what we're trying to educate our voters as well.
Did you have something you wanted to add?
I just want to point out, safety measure. We have testers, too. So if as the scenario Becky just suggested, they don't have their driver's license up to date. If they have someone else who has a current driver's license to attest, yes, Paul Pate does live at this address, that can suffice to get them registered and get them to vote.
A voucher. Not
voucher.
Yep. Voucher,
yeah.
Exactly.
Paul Pate, a new state law since the last presidential election changed the, sort of sped up the process of how voters' registration status is considered from active mm-hmm. to inactive, where if they don't vote. So folks, for right. example, voted in 2020 but not in 2022, they're now considered inactive registered voters. Are those Iowa voters aware of that, and what specifically does that mean for them? What do they need to know?
It doesn't change their position at all. They're still voters. It's an internal thing, and if they come and vote, they'll move off that inactive right back up to the active.
And they don't have to do anything right now.
They don't have to do anything whatsoever. So it doesn't really change it. It goes back to your question earlier about ERIC program, trying to keep the list clear. We do several mailings to these people trying to find out if they don't have a record of showing they're voting, we want to make sure they're still here. And at a certain point, if they're not responding in a certain period of different elections, we will move them off. But at this point, inactive, they're still like anybody else. They get to come in and vote.
How many cycles is it where if they haven't voted that they would get moved?
If you're on inactive, this presidential election will push some people into the next category.
Okay.
There have been some other voting law changes since the last presidential election. We've mentioned the shorter mail voting time frame, moving up deadlines for that. How are you monitoring, Paul Pate, how are you monitoring the impact of those election laws on voters? Are you seeing any uptick in rejection of ballots for being late?
Well, this will be the test, really, watching how this election goes. My office, and so has the county auditors, have had some serious discussions with the legislature about looking at the timetable on the early voting and the absentee balloting scenario. And I'm sure we'll be having some more of those this session because there's just some administrative things we may need a little more room to adjust for. I have not seen anything impacting voter turnout. We're talking here, we have over 130 hours of voting time people get in Iowa. So they have a lot of time, but they have to have a plan so they don't let it all fly by and their options start going off the table as they get closer to an election day. We're one of the more generous states, but we have one of the highest voter registrations and turnouts in the country here in Iowa. And I applaud the voters for that because they take it seriously.
Becky Bissell, I have some older friends, one of whom recently discovered that they're able to drive to their precinct and cast a ballot while they're still in their vehicle. Yeah. Explain that process.
Yeah, that is considered curbside voting. And at each one of the polling places, there would be a sign that has a phone number on it. So you'd pull up at that sign and you call that number. Some of them goes directly into the polling site. For like my county, it goes to my office and then I contact the chair of the precinct. And then they go out with all the necessary documents and forms so that that person can vote. It just helps them not have to get out of the car if they are unable to, or maybe they just don't feel safe going inside of a polling place. Whatever option they choose, we will accommodate that.
Paul Pate, you have the option if you want to make some changes between now and Election Day to make an appeal to the Legislative Council and get that approved. Do you have anything in the works?
Not at this time. I've had conversations with the governor and with the legislature about, you know, wanting to know if we've got everything we need to put this election in play. And I'm pretty confident in what we have. We worked hard over the cycles to give us all the tools we need. And I'm real sensitive. I don't want to put a lot of new things out in front of our county auditors, you know, because we've got to make sure we're doing what we do. Well, one of the biggest changes we made is we are standardizing the poll worker training out program, because you got 10,000 citizens who are our poll workers, your friends and neighbors, and we worked hard in our office and working with the county auditor. So we equipped them with a, you know, call it a script if you want, but it's basically an outline to start from. So every county is getting that same core training, and then the auditors, of course, personalize it to fit their county. To me, that's a big step, because it's the human factor here. You know, each county has to be ready to do the election to the best of their ability.
My job right now is to say we're out of time for this discussion. Thanks to both of you for being here today.
Thank you.
Best of luck on the election.
All right.
You can watch every episode of Iowa Press at iowapbs.org. For everyone here at Iowa PBS, thanks for watching today.
Funding for Iowa Press was provided by Friends, the Iowa PBS Foundation, the Associated General Contractors of Iowa, the public's partner in building Iowa's highway, bridge, and municipal utility infrastructure.
Elite Casino Resorts is a family-run business rooted in Iowa. We believe our employees are part of our family, and we strive to improve their quality of life and the quality of lives within the communities we serve.
Across Iowa, hundreds of neighborhood banks strive to serve their communities, provide jobs, and help local businesses. Iowa banks are proud to back the life you build. Learn more at iowabankers.com.